And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios on the 18th floor of 303 Wacker, our new digs. It is a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking about Chicago neighborhoods. There's recently Forbes put together a list of the coolest neighborhoods in the world, and one from Chicago made it. But we're going to talk about neighborhoods and our favorites and where we grew up, and get a little nostalgic about Chicago neighborhoods. We're going to talk about some food stuff, including Planters is bringing back their cheese balls, which people are very excited about, like very excited. So there's a lot more coming up too. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. And right now, though, it is that time. Every 2 weeks, we talk with Dan Feinberg. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always lots of TV to talk about with Dan. We always like his visits, and so let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right. It's lots of TV to talk about, as always. Can I ask you a general question here? Because the first, you know, you're gonna you talked about some Netflix stuff. How, on average, is there an average on how many Netflix shows debut a week?
Oh God! So you're gonna have to define the term Netflix shows debut, because okay, they have, say, let's say one or two big shows that premiere basically every week these days. So something new, something original, a second season of something, a Marvel show, etc. But then you've got all of these international shows that are pouring in at a rate of, I don't know, 5 to 10 per week. Sometimes they advertise them, sometimes they don't. Then in the average week these days, there'll be at least one or two comedy specials, and then in the average week, there'll be one or two or three or 10 Netflix movies. So the sheer number of stuff premiering on Netflix in any given week is like 50 original things. It's just with different headers on each of them.
Wow, that is really crazy. How does anybody try and to even keep up or catch up?
Oh, badly. I mean, you can't. There's a reason why I still haven't finished the previous season of Kimmy Schmidt. So this new season, haven't touched it.
Yeah.
I mean, it amazes me that there has been a new season of Arrested Development that's been out for 3 or 4 weeks now, and I haven't watched it, and
yeah,
I haven't felt bad about not watching it. It's just, there's just no time.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy. And then that, we're not even talking about the stuff that the other, you know, streaming possibilities are giving you. Like, you got your Amazon, you got your Amazon Prime, you got your Hulu, and they debut stuff pretty regularly too. Not as much as Netflix, but you know, there's new stuff happening there.
No, there is more and more stuff. Really, honestly, every week, and it gets harder and harder to dig out of holes once you fall behind on something. You know, sometimes you can, I'm not going to feel bad, for example, if I never finish the first season of Iron Fist. That's really just not going to get me down. I can probably live my life. Heck, I can probably start the second season of Iron Fist when it premieres and just not worry about it. But I don't know, Arrested Development, those first three seasons, they were a gold standard. They were one of the best runs of sitcom seasons ever.
Yep.
And so season 4 was a mess. It was, let's just say, not very good,
right,
maybe even bad.
Right.
But even still, that's 3 great seasons, 1 not good season, and the 5th season, I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it someday.
That's exactly how I feel.
Don't know.
That's exactly how I feel about Arrested Development. I was really, really let down by season 4.
It's still so sad if you think about it. If you told yourself in 2005 that there would be mysterious new seasons of Arrested Development popping up and that you just wouldn't be able to get to them because, you know, life's too short, you would have laughed at yourself.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about you recent Hollywood Reporter stories that you've written in the Critics Notebook. You wrote about Nanette Set It Off or Set It Up. Tell us about this. We're speaking of Netflix.
We are indeed, because I was so busy watching whichever Netflix stuff I was reviewing for last week, which I think was probably the second season of Luke Cage. And then for this week, which is the British virtual reality drama Kiss Me First, which people can probably skip. But the interesting thing to me that I was sort of noticing last weekend and then into this weekend were the Netflix things that people were latching on to early on Friday, and the things that went from shows or movies or whatever that I had never heard of on Thursday night, basically, to by Saturday night being like, okay, fine, I'll watch these things because I can't be out of the conversation, for heaven's sakes, because, yeah, you know, it's what I do for a living.
Right.
So last weekend when I wasn't watching a lot of Netflix stuff for work, I watched a bunch of Netflix stuff for fun, which I then wrote about, so it became work. So that's the enjoyable vicious cycle of my life, Nick.
Right. So tell us a little bit about...
On the bright side, the stuff I watched was actually really good, and particularly, I've just been telling everyone this now since the weekend and will continue to. If you haven't heard of and if you haven't yet watched Hannah Gadsby's comedy special Nanette, it's essential. It's the most essential comedy special in recent memory. I compared it to the Tig Notaro cancer show that Louis C.K. recorded and posted online that became kind of a landmark special.
Yeah.
As being sort of the thing that I would compare it to, where something comes and it just supersedes everything that came before it, not so much in the this is funnier than any comedy special you've ever seen before, because it's not, but just you need to watch it. You probably need to watch it knowing as little as possible, other than that that Hannah Gadsby is a Australian comedian. She's from Tasmania. She's gay, and that's probably all you need to know, and you'd probably figure all that out in the first 60 seconds of the special anyway. And the special is about the reason why she says she's done doing comedy specials.
Wow.
And it is fantastic. It is hilarious, but it's also bracingly real, unexpectedly emotional, constantly, like not just one or two little moments that sneak up on you. Like, it's punching you in the gut regularly. It's smart. It's profound. It is a deconstruction of the entire comedy special and stand-up experience. It's just really, it is a thing that goes above, where if you were to tell someone what is interesting in stand-up comedy in 2018, I would tell people they need to watch Nanette. It's only 70 minutes, so, you know, it's only 70 minutes, and you really will laugh. You'll also feel things, and that'll be okay. But yeah, that's the thing I'm making sure everyone watches.
That sounds
this week.
My
parents to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing, and I will definitely jump on that. No question about it. Hannah Gadsby's Nanette. That's 70 minutes of my weekend that are going to be taken. I guarantee I'll watch it this week.
Easy. 70. Think of it as two episodes of a half hour show. It's a breeze.
Yeah.
So that was the primary one of the things that I watched over the weekend. That's the one that I'm telling everyone. Then there's also the new movie Set It Up, which has a really bad title, and so I keep screwing it up because I want to call it Step Up. I want to call it
Set It Off. It reminded me of the Queen Latifah movie.
Yes. Yes. Totally.
Yeah.
You can't say it properly, and yet apparently people are, and I think more people have probably heard of this one because it's now had a full 10 days or so of people talking about it. And it's basically proof that Hollywood doesn't make enough romantic comedies anymore. And so when a decent one comes along, people are like, oh my God, I love romantic comedies. Why don't they make romantic comedies anymore? And this is a decent one. Basically, the premise is two assistants, played by Glenn Powell and Zoe Deutsch. Zoe Deutsch, who you know, is Leah Thompson's daughter. Glenn Powell, who you know from Scream Queens, or you know them both from the Richard Linklater baseball movie.
Yeah. I love that you refer to it as a baseball movie, because obviously it was advertised. Everybody wants them. Was advertised as a spiritual, follow up to Dazed, and I think it is, and I think it's great. But it turns out, like, when I saw it, I didn't expect it to be a great baseball movie, and it's a great baseball movie.
So, for sure. Yeah. It's a spiritual sequel to Bad News Bears, if you want to talk Richard Linklater. I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yes. So, and basically the premise is they play these two 20-something assistants who decide the only way they can get their bosses off of their backs, bosses played by Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu, is to set them up on dates and to make them fall in love. And so they do that, and spoiler alert, somewhere in the process, maybe they find a little flirtation between themselves. Maybe. Uh-huh. Hypothetically. And it's really, you know, it's, look, it's not the best romantic comedy you've ever seen. It's not, it's really, it's only good, but the fact that it's good is enough, because there aren't really enough good romantic comedies, and some people are kind of elevating it a little bit above what it is, but if you like romantic comedies and you're like, why have I not seen a decent one in 10 years, it's a decent one. It's on Netflix. Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell are totally charming, very likable together. They should be encouraged to make other future movies together, because they're a cute couple. And yeah, so that was my weekend, and also watching a lot of episodes of The Break with Michelle Wolf to catch up on that. Have you been watching that?
I have. I'm behind, but I've been watching it. She's great. She's just great.
She really is. The show is exactly what I want it to be. It is, because I like her, it's a delivery system for her, if you like her.
Yeah, and I love her. I think she's great. I've always been a fan of hers. You know, now you mentioned Set It Up. The only reason that I kind of knew about it, besides, I getting my emails from, Netflix telling me things that are debuting, and I seem to get emails 14 times a day from Netflix letting me know what's new. Pete Davidson was on. He did little bit of the talk show circuit. And besides all the, obviously everybody, all they're talking about is Ariana Grande and him. But he did bring a clip. My favorite appearance was when he was on Jimmy Fallon. And I don't know if you saw this or not. Pete Davidson was on Jimmy Fallon. Obviously, they spent a lot of time talking about Ariana Grande. Robert Pattinson was on the couch next to him. Pete Davidson was there to plug this movie that you're talking about, this Netflix movie, Set It Up. But he spent his entire time talking about how great Good Time is, and fawning over Robert Pattinson on how he should have won an Oscar and how great the movie is. And he brought a clip from Good Time, and it was hilarious. And to see, Pattinson's reaction to it, just like he alternately sort of embarrassed and, like really humbled, because he would not stop talking about the movie Good Time. He wore a T-shirt of a Good Time T-shirt with Robert Pattinson's face on it, and spent most of the interview talking about Good Time Jimmy Fallon's like, look, I want to remind you, you're here to plug a movie that you're in. And he's like, yeah, we'll get to that. Anyway, Good Time. And he kept going on and on about it. And then he's like, yeah, Set It Up. It's fine. I'm in it for 2 seconds. Everybody else is great and you should watch it. But anyway, you should rent Good Time. And that was like most of the interview, which I found really hilarious.
That is very funny and maybe enough to get me to break my I prefer not to watch Jimmy Fallon clips rule. But yes, Pete Davidson's in it. He is in it for, I would say he's in it for 5 minutes. I mean, he's way underselling his time there. But he's funny. There are a lot of really good people in small roles. Meredith Hagner from Search Party. Titus Burgess has basically one scene, but he's fantastic in it.
Yeah,
it's a cute movie. It's one of those things where if you start tugging at the thread in any way at all, you start noticing how kind of thin and vaguely banal it is in certain respects.
Yeah,
but it's cute enough and charming enough. Okay. That whatever.
All right, cool. So, but the big one to watch that's been added is the comedy special, Hannah Gadsby's Nanette. That's the big one. All right.
Yes.
Okay, Dan.
Everybody check that one out.
Okay, cool. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. He talks to us every couple of weeks about television. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, more with Dan. And And welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline Studios on the 18th floor at 303 North or East Wacker. Where the hell am I? And it's our new digs, and we're having a great time with that. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. Get them in right now. We are going to be talking about Chicago neighborhoods in many different ways, historically, and some of the most fun, and we'll look back at some of the other ones. There's also some food things that we're going to talk about as well. You can contact us anytime you want at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Our guest right now, though, is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk about TV, and this is that week. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
Okay, I am very curious about Sharp Objects, which is coming up on HBO. It looks really interesting, and I'm a massive fan of Amy Adams. So, and I've been seeing they show commercials for it constantly on HBO as I watch Succession over and over again, and I like it every week more and more. And I really hope Kieran Culkin gets some sort of recognition. I'm serious. I mean, everybody on it is great, and I raved about him the last time we talked. But he's so good on Succession. I mean, he's so good, and I really think the show is great. But anyway,
we're also hitting the point at which the show really starts hitting its stride. I think the next three episodes, which were the last of the three I saw before the season started, are really definitely my favorites of the first batch.
It's a terrific show.
It's only getting better.
It's a terrific show, and I laugh out loud every episode. But anyway, because of all that, you get to see a lot of trailers and ads for Sharp Objects, and it looks really interesting, and it's got a pretty good pedigree as well.
It does. It has a very good pedigree. It is based on the novel by Gone Girl novelist Gillian Flynn. I'm never sure which ones are. I know the one from Love and Community is Gillian. One I'm sure of.
Right.
From there, I get confused.
Right.
Anyway, so yes, it is. This one was her first book. And the series is adapted by Marty Noxon, who is behind many, many TV shows, including the current Dietland on AMC. But Gillian Flynn, or Gillian Flynn, also was part of the writing staff on the show, so she sort of had her hand in it the whole way. It's directed in its entirety by Jean-Marc Vallier from Big Little Lies and also Wild and Dallas Buyers Club, etc. And, of course, as you say, it stars Amy Adams as a sort of damaged, troubled journalist of middling quality who is kind of recovering from some incident that we only learn about as the show goes along, and her editor decides it's a good idea to send her back to her rural southern Missouri hometown because there have been a spate of missing girls, one found dead and one still missing, and he decides that the right thing to do with his extremely fragile and disturbed reporter is to send her back to her hometown to investigate dead girls. And not surprisingly, as she goes home, she begins to unravel a little bit as the demons from her past and the demons of the present begin to intersect and whatnot. As I said in my review, it's a kind of odd project because it's not a very good mystery. There are only a couple suspects. You don't really get all that invested in the clues. You're not really wondering if the girls are going to be found or if they're dead or whatever. But it doesn't really matter because Amy Adams' character isn't a detective, so it's not her job to investigate these things. The law enforcement figures are played by Matt Craven, who's a familiar character actor who many people will recognize, and Chris Messina, who people will know from lots of things, Mindy Project, Newsroom, etc., etc. But they have very, very marginal parts. The biggest parts are obviously Amy Adams, but also Patricia Clarkson as her mother, and then Eliza Scanlon, who's a relative newcomer, as the half-sister to Amy Adams' character. One of the strange things about the series, if you pay too much attention, is that it's not exactly sure how old any of the characters are. And so you can sort of go, okay, wait, I think Amy Adams is this age, but the character she's playing here seems to be about 10 years younger. Does that mean that it really is possible for Patricia Clarkson to be her mother? Kinda. There's this teenage girl who is her half-sister, and it kinda makes sense. Anyway, it's twisty, it's dark, it's extremely well-directed. I would say it feels much more Jean-Marc Vallée-y than Big Little Lies, if you like his particular style. And he's also the editor on all the episodes. So there's a lot of jumping around in time. So there's a young version of the Amy Adams character, and she's played by the same actress who played young Bev in It, Sophia Lillis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the casting is uncanny. They can cut between scenes of this young actress and scenes of Amy Adams, and it's one of the best pieces of young version casting I can recall. It's just so good, and the blurring of the lines between those two characters is fantastic. It's twisty, and it's a tough show to binge, but I think probably it's also a good show to binge because, again, the mystery is not really the thing you're going to get invested in. You're going to invest in watching Amy Adams unravel, and she does it wonderfully, and barring something that I can't instantly identify, I think she can probably start planning her award speeches 15 months out on the Emmys. I mean, this premieres in July, and she won't get to accept her Emmy until next September. That's a long time. But she'll get a Golden Globe before then and a SAG Award before then, so she'll be rehearsed. She's really good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she's always really good. I'm just a huge fan of hers. So I'm excited about that. And that that debuts next week, correct?
Debuts on the 8th of July, so whenever that is. This weekend,
next
but
Sunday.
The weekend after.
A week from Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Sharp Objects. Very, very cool. We'll talk about that as well. So listen, you were talking about the Emmys and the fact that she's going to have to wait a full year in order to get hers. But the voting has the voting stopped now?
The voting for nominations has stopped now, and then we will find out the nominees in a couple weeks, I believe.
Okay, so what now? I know that you guys did like a last-minute Emmy plea, you and Tim, talking about movies or shows that you would like to give a push to. What are you looking at for a couple of weeks when they announce the Emmy nominees? And by the way, we're going to talk about the TV Critics Award nominations and go through those as well. But what's going on with the Emmys? What's the vibe that you get on what you think are going to get nominated?
I think the thing I'm going to be most curious about personally is basically being protective for the Americans, because this is its last chance at nominations and wins, and this is a show that has been unquestionably one of the five best shows of the last decade, and as of now, its only wins are a couple acting wins for Margot Martindale that she only questionably deserves. But as we get towards the home stretch, I mean, Matthew Rhys and Kerry Russell have to get their nominations. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The show has to be nominated for drama series. But I really need the show to get a bunch of other nominations in categories that it hasn't been nominated for. I need Noah Emmerich to get a nomination. I need Holly Page to get a nomination. I need Holly Taylor, rather, who played Page, to get a nomination. I need directing nominations. I need writing nominations. I need a show that really basically has only gotten like four or five or six nominations in its busiest years to get 15. And it's not going to, but I'll just get angry about that then. And I will get angry when, for example, Westworld gets 15 nominations for an utterly BS, up its own butt, pretentious, broad drudgery of a season.
Yeah.
So I'm already getting ready about the things I'm going to be angry about getting nominations instead of the Americans, and then I'm ready for it. And you know, it's easier to get ready for that because I think the Americans will get some of those nominations. This isn't like me getting annoyed about *Halt and Catch Fire*, which will also be in its last chance to get nominations and also should be getting like 10 to 15 nominations, and it will get zero nominations. So I know that. I've made my peace with that. But right. The Americans, I am ready to fight on.
All right. Well, so what are the odds-on favorites? I mean, is it looking like is Handmaid's Tale gonna do as well as it did last year? I mean, there was such a backlash against how dark it was.
I feel like probably the backlash was overstated and kind of a gut reaction to having to dive back into that world after having been out of it. Like, I haven't heard as much about it in the past 5 or 6 weeks, and the episodes have been, if anything, even darker.
Oh, my God.
And I feel like, basically, if anything, the show sort of, it sheared off a few people who just were wobbly fans to begin with.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's okay. It's not going to be for everyone. But yeah, I expect it will be right there in the mix again. Speaking of things I've decided I'm ready to fight on, I'm ready to get angry if Yvonne Strahovski is not nominated, because to me, she's been the supporting standout of the season.
She's remarkable on it. I still think it's one of the best things on TV.
I agree.
Yeah, it's just great.
And Elizabeth Moss is so good, and every week
she
amazes me by doing different things.
No, she's incredible. She's incredible. She's absolutely incredible. There's no question about it. Now,
and for all of that, it's going to be Game of Thrones again. You know, that's the thing is for all of that and Game of Thrones, which hasn't been on the air for 10 months. So, but it had won the previous 2 or 3 years before. It wasn't on last year, so.
Yeah,
Handmaid's Tale got to sneak in, but I would expect Game of Thrones to get 20 nominations again, and that's just how these things go.
Now, what about what are the chances for Barry? We're going to talk a little bit, obviously, about the TV Critic Awards, where you know it got some stuff. But what are the odds on Barry getting some big nominations from the Emmys?
I would say it will get some.
Okay.
But that could be only 3 or 4. I think probably Bill Hader feels like a sure thing.
I hope so.
But I don't know that. But I don't know that the show feels like a sure thing. I don't know that any of the supporting performances feel like sure things.
Not even Henry Winkler. Not even Henry Winkler.
No, I would say he has a decent chance. But I would not say a sure thing. If I had to guess, I would guess Hader gets a nomination, maybe gets a nomination for series, and then it gets a writing nomination for the pilot or something. That tends to be the way these things go. And, you know, if it gets 7 or 8 nominations and they want to surprise me, I would be in no way disappointed by that. I think it will get some recognition, but not as much as people who love the show think it deserves.
Right, and I'm one of those people who loves the show. And I really think that Hader's going to get nominated, and I really hope that it was episode 7 that they sent for consideration, because that's the one. As soon as it was over, I was like, send that one to the Emmys right now and get that nomination for Hader.
With new shows, though, they almost always go with the pilots for these things. That just tends to be the way they go, and he's very good in the pilots. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
But with new shows, the tendency is to make the pilot the episode they send out for consideration in almost everything, just because if you don't know if people have seen the show, it's the easiest way to make sure that people can watch the episode, get right into it, and
exactly.
not get lost.
Yeah.
Whereas you know, a later show, it's a different thing. So I would assume it would be the pilot that they put forward, and I would guess that it will get a few nominations.
Okay, all right,
not 10.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, Dan, hang on, okay? Because when we come back, I want to go through the TV Critic Award nominations with you and get your thoughts on that. Okay.
Excellent.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. We're going to take a break and come back and talk more TV with Dan after this. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the same number for talk and text. And we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, for your Thursday morning drive. Dan Feinberg is my guest. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're getting into the awards season. Emmy nominations are going to be announced in a couple of weeks, and the TV Critic Awards were nominated. The nominations were announced just recently, and we want to get Dan's thoughts on that and much more TV to talk about. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome back Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
Okay, tell everybody about the TV Critic Awards.
The TCA Awards, we give them out during the summer press tour, and we're approaching that. That begins July 25th, and I assume that we will have at least one of our regular visits that overlaps with that, if not two, because it's a basically endless event, and so that's how these things go. And this year's awards will be on August 4th. They will be hosted by your friend and mine, Robin Thiene, so
yay.
I'm very excited that we got her to do that.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome. That's great.
I think she will do a very good job, and I think that there will be some people in the room who don't have a clue who she is, and hopefully at the end of her little 10-minute monologue intro, she'll have some new fans. So if I've done nothing else, I will be happy with that as an achievement.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we give out 12 awards recent years. This year we added an award for sketch and late night comedy because people felt like we kept giving comedy shows awards in the news category, and that kept confusing people. So we decided to make sure there was a different show for the Samantha Bees and John Oliver's and hypothetically Daily Shows, et cetera, of the world. So this year we're up to 13 awards. It's a good show, and we honor a lot of good TV, and I feel like our nominations this year cover a good amount of TV. It's not my perfect ballot, but it's a very good ballot.
Okay, so Killing Eve is the breakaway star, and I'm so glad that you told me to watch that show because it's amazing. So BBC America's Killing Eve got the most nominations.
Which it had the added advantage of being up for a new program, and so that's how it was able to get an extra nomination ahead of the Americans, which was the second most nominated show. But I believe in a first time for any of these categories in my memory, you have two stars from two different shows going up against each other. So in the individual achievement and drama category, you have Matthew Rhys and Carrie Russell going against Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh from Killing Eve. And so that should be competitive and interesting. And then if you don't like those four, you also have Elizabeth Moss from The Handmaid's Tale, who we've already talked about at least once this program, but also every single week.
Yes,
you know, we don't spare the praise for her, and that's fine. And also Darren Criss from the assassination of Johnny Versace, American Crime Story. So I think that's a great category, and it will be very interesting to see how the votes get split up. If those four in the two shows basically cannibalize each other's votes and someone else wins, who knows? But there would be no bad winner in that category.
Yeah, no, it's true, because everybody was really, really good. I wasn't crazy about the assassination of Gianni Versace, but I thought Darren Criss was quite good in it and really sort of skin-crawlingly creepy in it.
Yeah, and I think that's a recognition of that. I think there are definitely plenty of reasons to quibble about Johnny Versace, and I know some people who truly love it, who prefer it to OJ, who think it's a deeper and more thoughtful thing than OJ, but regardless of whether you love it or hate it, Darren Criss is really good.
He is. Okay, Dan, hang on. Okay,
sure,
we are going to take a break, and when we come back we'll go through more of these nominations for the TCA Awards, which will be handed out on August 4th. So Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We're going to break for the news, and then we come back. We will talk more TV and get through these nominations again. So more coming up right after this on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above Chicago at 303 East Wacker in our new digs, having a great time. It's a Thursday morning. That means Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in right now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. We got some food stuff that we're going to be talking about, including the return of Planters cheese balls that people are very excited about, and we're going to be talking about Chicago neighborhoods in general, historically, and all that cool stuff. A little Chicago talk coming up. Right now, though, we want to get back to the conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we've been talking TV, and specifically, the TV Critic Award nominations, which have been announced, and we're going through the categories with Dan, talking about some of the achievements that have been nominated for the TV year. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So you talked about achievement in drama, individual achievement in drama, which is a really good category. Individual achievement in comedy, also a really good category. Pamela Adlon for Better Things, Rachel Bloom for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Ted Danson for The Good Place, which I was happy to see that, Donald Glover for Atlanta, and Bill Hader for Barry. Another strong category.
It is, and I particularly love that four of the six performers in this category are creators also, because these individual achievement categories, they almost always end up being interpreted by us as performers, but there's no rule in the TCA bylaws that says that a showrunner couldn't win, or a writer, or a director who had a particularly good year, et cetera. And so it's nice when you have people who wore many, many hats. And heaven knows that Pamela Adlon, Rachel Bloom, Donald Glover, and Bill Hader wore many hats on their particular shows, and that Ted Danson and Rachel Brosnahan were just awesome on theirs. And so, again, there's no wrong winner in that category.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, of course, rooting for Donald Glover. let's see. So you've now added the outstanding achievement in news and information, or you've altered that a little bit. You got Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, we've tried to keep focus on news and information.
Gotcha.
But,
gotcha. You know. Yeah, I understand. Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, 60 Minutes, Blue Planet 2, The Rachel Maddow Show, The Vietnam War, and Wild Wild Country. Again, strong competitors right there too.
It is, and the balloting process. Anthony Bourdain's death came right in the middle of the balloting process, and I have no doubt that it added visibility for his show.
Yeah.
And I assume that the show pulled out a nomination as a result of that, and probably that will benefit it, again, as no good word choice there. And probably the thing that suffers as a result is the Vietnam War, but Ken Burns has won many, many TV awards as recently as last year when we gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award.
I'm
not going to worry about Ken Burns.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should worry about Ken Burns. He's fine. To go over now to the Outstanding Achievement in Sketch Variety Shows, a great category. You know, I mean, there are a lot of these people who are hosting these variety shows and these late night shows are doing such great work in this era. You got Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, Jimmy Kimmel Live. Jimmy Kimmel really changed his sort of persona over the past year and a half. The once guy who would watch women jump up and down on trampolines and drink beer, has now become like a political voice that's impassioned, and it's a real change and a fun change to see in him. You know,
definitely you would not have guessed he had that in him, and he probably didn't at the time. And guess what? Sometimes people grow and mature.
That's exactly
how nice.
Right.
Yeah. I hope for the same for all of us.
Yeah,
maybe.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which I think is firing on all cylinders. I think it's so great. I love the thing about the John Oliver, about Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, is the sort of relentless pace of that show. Like, he speaks fast and a lot, but it's all funny, and it all, you know, the bits are really good. But the pacing of that show is breathless, you know? And it's just one guy sitting at a desk for the most part until they bring somebody out like Bobby Moynihan dressed as Santa in the last episode. But I really, I just, it's a joy to watch him perform on that show. And I think the writing is really brilliant and smart, and you learn something when you watch it.
No, it is a remarkable show, and it's an important show, and it's the kind of show where if we had decided to honor it in News and Information, as we have in the past, I would not have felt that was a bad thing, because it is a show that provides news and informs.
Yes, absolutely. And I think Seth Meyers does the same thing. He's in there, Late Show with Stephen Colbert. That kind of goes without saying. Did you, by the way, did you happen to see his monologue from a couple of nights ago after Trump slammed him at that at one of his rallies?
I missed that. I thought Fallon did that too, or was everyone just doing?
Everybody
that
just did it because he specifically, you know, mentioned at one point Fallon was mentioned in a tweet about the hair tousling incident, and Trump went after him there. But this was at a rally at one of the, I think, South Carolina rally, where he went after them by name, but then referred to Colbert as that guy from CBS. And that's all he said. He said, that guy from CBS is terrible. He's got no class. He's got no talent. No talent whatsoever. And they played this clip. Colbert played this clip during his monologue a couple of nights ago. And then they play the clip, and they come back, and Colbert goes, sir, I refuse to allow you to insult James Corden in that way. have you seen the carpool karaoke with Paul McCartney? It's funny. You laugh, you cry. That man, James Corden, has great talent. Oh, I'm being informed he's talking about me. So I thought that he handled that pretty funny. And then, of course, Saturday Night Live, which, you know, politically didn't have as strong a season, because I think the Alec Baldwin stuff is getting a little bit long in the tooth, I think. So,
yeah, I definitely could have removed the SNL slot for the aforementioned Robin Thede, for Jim Jefferies' show, et cetera. There are definitely plenty of contenders who could have taken that slot, but SNL has sort of a legacy spot, and there it is.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the achievement in movie or miniseries, Alias Grace, the assassination of Gianni Versace, Howard's End, Patrick Melrose, The Tale, and Twin Peaks, The Return. And it was, by the way, yesterday was the year anniversary of Episode 8. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that.
did you rewatch it? Did you throw a party?
I did not rewatch it, but I just, you know, I recalled, you know, the first time watching it, just jaw on the floor during the entire running time. So
it's another good category.
It is a good category. Did you catch up with Patrick Melrose yet?
No, I've watched the first two episodes, and very much appreciate what Benedict Cumberbatch is doing. I have some skepticism as to how much energy I feel like I have for it. I feel like I have a sense of what its rhythms are and can appreciate them, but at some point I'll get to it. But I watched a couple episodes just so I was in the loop on it.
Gotcha.
I'm in the loop.
Okay. Outstanding new programming. New program: Barry, Counterpart, Glow, Killing Eve, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Mindhunter. What are you leaning towards there? Is it going to go to Killing Eve, you think?
I think so. If you look at the sheer number of nominations it has in all those categories. Speaking of things that I really hope get Emmy nominations, I hope J.K. Simmons gets an Emmy nomination for Counterpart. And I was disappointed. That was one where I was disappointed we didn't find a way to get him into the individual drama category, because he's fantastic, and that's a great performance. And it's a show that probably not that many people have watched yet, and the show could use a little boost.
I'm one of those Counterpart. I'm one of those people. I love J.K. Simmons, but I've not watched Counterpart. But
it's a good show. I think you would like it. I'm not putting my guaranteed stamp of approval on it for you though.
Okay. All right. It's achievement and drama: The Americans, The Crown, The Good Fight, Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, and This Is Us. That's a good category as well.
It is, and there's lots of range. You know, we even got a network show in there with This Is Us. We got whatever strange thing CBS All Access is You know, that's fine. No, before going to Austin to the ATX TV Festival, which we talked about last time I was on, I watched the entire second season of Good Fight, and it's a really strong show. For people who liked Good Wife, it's a lot like Good Wife, only without the mopey Alicia soap opera stuff, and just with a lot of Trump stuff. But funny Trump stuff, so it's good.
All right, cool. And then Achievement in Comedy, Atlanta, Barry, Glow, The Good Place, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and One Day at a Time. Nice to see that in there. And yes, again, sure. I love all these shows. So, yeah. And
there are very few shows that stick out in our nominations as being clearly wrong, and I'm always relieved when that happens.
Yeah, and then finally the big one, Program of the Year. Now tell us why you guys have the Program of the Year, and it makes it unique.
The thing I always insist on this one is that the Program of the Year is slightly different from Outstanding Achievement in Drama and Outstanding Achievement in Comedy. And sometimes they overlap, but often they don't. And Program of the Year, it can be the show that's the best show on TV if that's what it is. And last year, Handmaid's Tale was that, and that was fine. But sometimes we give it to the show that sort of defined the year in TV and that defined the zeitgeist of the year in TV, even if it wasn't really the quote-unquote best show. So when Empire won a couple of years ago, was Empire the best show on TV? No, it most certainly was not. But for one year, was Empire the thing that defined what TV was in that moment? Yeah, it was. And so that's what I like about this as a category, is that sometimes it can recognize the best thing of the year, but sometimes it can just recognize the thing of the year, you know, the show that defined the year. And so I like that, and I think these are all good category, good choices in different ways for that standard.
It's The Americans, Atlanta, The Good Place, Handmaid's Tale, Killing Eve, and This Is Us. All, you know, what you just talked about, the thing that you described, all of those could go either way. There's no question about it.
As long as we don't embarrass ourselves, that's all that makes difference to me.
Are you leaning towards The Americans on this one?
That would be my hunch, because I don't know that there is a sort of obvious zeitgeist show in quite the same way. I think definitely Killing Eve has some of that.
Yeah.
You know, in that it had the significance of having, you know, ratings going up every week and having gone from a show that basically no one knew existed to suddenly being a tiny little juggernaut by the end of the season. So that was an impressive thing that did. You know, Handmaid's Tale, it's mighty impressive how it, you know, a show that could have fallen apart after one season, you know, leaving behind the Margaret Atwood source material, how well it has continued is a remarkable thing. This Is Us continues to be the defining broadcast show of the moment. So it's there. Atlanta had Teddy Perkins, for heaven's sake.
I know.
And if there's a more discussed TV episode, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no.
So, and Good Place is just great. So
No, those are all great. I mean, I'm Atlanta all the way. And for such a great, you know, a great season, an incredible season. And not only the Teddy Perkins episode, which is just beyond anything, but the episode where the Paperboy's trying to get a haircut. I mean, I don't know if I've laughed harder. I don't know if I've laughed harder at anything all season than that episode. The slow burn in that episode just destroys me. So that's just many.
I think if I were ranking those six based on just quality, Atlanta would be my number one. But then you bring in all the other things, and who knows? You know, the Americans has the last seasonness of it. It has the sentiment of it. It has all of that. So it's an interesting category, and I can see voting for almost all of those. I can't really see voting for This Is Us, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm sure other people can.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's again, they will be presented. Robin Thede is the host. It'll be August 4th. Will it be broadcast anywhere? Can people watch it online or anything?
No, we do not televise and we do not broadcast. We treat it as sort of a private event for us to honor the people we like, basically, and it's a winners only event for the most part. So it's just a chummy, relaxed night. The speeches tend to be very loose and free flowing because they don't need to worry about things getting out there,
right.
And it's just a fun event that I will definitely report back all the details to you afterwards.
Got it. We'll talk to you a couple times before that, obviously.
For sure.
Okay. Dan, always a pleasure. People can check you out at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and read you with The Hollywood Reporter. Always a pleasure, Dan. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
We'll have so much Big Brother to talk about then.
Yes, we will. I did not watch last night's episode live. I'm going to watch it in the morning. We now have an extra.
Okay,
we now have an extra hour on our show. We start an hour earlier, which means that's an hour less sleep for me. So Big Brother will be, I believe, for the most part, watched the morning after. So.
Huh. Okay. Well, we will adapt accordingly and discuss as necessary.
Yeah.
When we get to it.
Okay, we will. All right, Dan. Thanks, man.
Till then.
Dan Feinberg, everybody, and there you go. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGiulio on 720 WGN.